for me, what do I do to clear my head? I have a couple, I guess. I like early morning runs when it's really quiet out. My neighborhood is sometimes kind of busy, but when I can get out early, it's pretty quiet. It's still not very windy, not many cars out. I like to do that. And I don't do, like, when I run, there's no music or podcast. It's just me. So that helps me clear my mind. But kind of just spending time, a little bit of time, alone. And I asked about that today because today is a scene where Jesus goes to Gethsemane, which is a place he goes to famously pray and to spend time with God before he is arrested. We're going to get to all of that kind of part today. All right, so this is kind of where Jesus goes, so that's why I asked you about that. We're in week two of our little mini-series, Road to the Cross, The Final Days of Jesus. If you have been with us for any amount of time, we are taking a little break from Sermon on the Mount to run a series up through Easter. So we have a few more weeks, then Good Friday and Easter, then we'll dive back into Sermon on the Mount. But today, we're continuing Jesus' road to the cross. We're going to Gethsemane, which is a place where Jesus just went to be alone with the Father. It's time that the prophecies that he shared last week in the Last Supper are going to start to come to fruition. Really, this is, it's kind of go time. This is when things really start to kick off. And when I looked at this whole passage today, it's about 20 verses long, what I got a big sense of was submission. This is a big sense of Jesus really submitting to what God's will is, what the Father's will is for him. So when I think about it, the main thing I want you to hear today is when we fully live for God, which is something we want to do, fully live for God does involve fully submitting to God, all right? Fully living for God is fully submitting to God. And we're going to hear today kind of four different things that are kind of involved in submitting to God. Now, not all of these things will necessarily happen in your life, but they happen in this passage. So they're kind of things that could happen. We're going to see sorrow. We're going to see weakness. We're going to see betrayal. We're going to see abandonment. Please don't get up and walk out of the room because those are downers, okay? But this is part of it. It's not like this super cheery section, but it is part of what can happen when we fully live for God. So again, we're in Gethsemane. This is where it all kind of starts. The end of Jesus' life really kicks into play here. All right, so they're in Gethsemane. Gethsemane on its own, the word means oil press, which means there was probably an olive grove present near where they were. It's actually only referred to as Gethsemane in the Gospels of Matthew and Mark. We are using Mark's gospel for our road, so that's why it's Gethsemane. Some of you may have heard it as the Garden of Gethsemane. John's gospel is the only one that refers to it as a garden. Whatever it is, whether it's a full-blown garden, whatever it is a place where Jesus and his disciples probably went semi-regularly for fellowship and prayer. It was a place where Jesus could go and he would pray and other people would do that. And it is here that Jesus decides to go to be alone with his Father when the end of his life is really starting to begin. So let's dive into it. It's going to be Mark chapter 14. The whole passage is 32 through 52. We're going to break it up into four sections today. Verses will be up here behind me, or your Bibles on the table are great. NIV translation, as always, for us. So let's read. We're going to start with Mark 14, 32 through 36, and let's see what we got. They went to a place called Gethsemane, and Jesus said to his disciples, "Sit here while I pray." He took Peter, James, and John along with him, and he began to be deeply distressed and troubled. "My soul is overwhelmed with sorrow to the point of death," he said to them. "Stay here and keep watch." Going a little farther, he fell to the ground and prayed that if possible, the hour might pass from him. "Abba, Father," he said, "everything is possible for you. Take this cup from me, yet not what I will, but what you will." Let's stop there for a minute here. This first part, this is the sorrow piece, all right? So what Jesus does is he leaves some of the disciples in one place and takes the three, Peter, James, and John. This is normal. These are kind of his inner three, inner circle. They go a little further with Jesus, and he tells them he's distressed, he's troubled, he's overwhelmed, he is filled with sorrow. Jesus is showing emotion. To remember, he is fully human at this time as well as fully God. He's showing emotion. He is distressed because he knows what's coming. So he prays, and he says, "Abba, Father." Abba shows this very intimate connection with the Father. This is a very father-son relationship, as if it's a child praying to their father. Let it happen some other way. He says, "Let the hour pass or take this cup from me. This is Jesus saying, if there is another way to do this, please let it happen. The cup is a metaphor for punishment and judgment. So he's like, if there is another way for there to be punishment or there to be judgment for what needs to happen, Father, let it happen. But then he fully submits and says, not my will, but yours. He knows this is going to happen soon. I fully believe with this passage, Jesus wants it done another way. And I think he knows that the Father could do it differently. But even in this moment, he fully submits to what the Father has planned, to what his will is. And he's filled with sorrow because of it. And he lets down a plan he might want and lets the Father's plan come through. So as I said, this is a very father-son type of interaction, or a parent-child type of interaction. So I was thinking about some of mine with my son. I have a six-year-old, Jeremiah, many of you know. And I was trying to think, there are lots of times where Jeremiah thinks he has a better idea than I do. This is pretty common. He's six. I don't think he can hear me, but he would agree. So I was thinking of one of them. And we struggle to get Jeremiah to eat his vegetables. He doesn't want to do it. Now, I'm sure a lot of kids don't want to do that, but that's normal. He doesn't want to eat his vegetables. So what he does is he'll try to, like, bargain it. Be like, oh, maybe I don't have to eat my spinach or my carrots, or I can do something else or something like that. And I'm like, no, you need to eat your vegetables. It's good for you. It's healthy. It's what you need to have. Right? You need to eat these. And he would probably want to do it any other way. I mean, yeah, does he eat his vitamins and stuff? Sure. But I'm like, no, you need to eat your vegetable. Usually it's spinach. Actually, we get him to eat spinach in a wrap. So he's like, can I do this another way? No, you can't. You need to eat it. And eventually he does. Now, I know that's a very different example than here, what Jesus is doing with the Father, but it's that same idea that basically we have to put down our own way and submit to the will of God. And submitting to God is really hard, and it may come, unfortunately, with pain or with sorrow, with distress. But that's kind of part of it. And it's not, I want to make sure we take this little piece the right way. Because it's not about saying it's God's will. It's not just about accepting something bad that happens. You know, if you have somebody close to you that gets hurt or in an accident or maybe dies and just say, oh, that's part of God's will, part of the plan. That's not what Jesus is saying here. That misses the point here. The point of this is Jesus saying, I would like to do it another way, but I will put down my way and follow your way, God. That's what this is. Because God's way is the only way. That can be a hard path, but Jesus sets this example by saying, not my will, not my plan, my personal plan. God, I would do it a different way, but yours. Your will be done. That's what Jesus is getting at here. So the first part is sorrow. Part of fully submitting to God, it can come with sorrow. Let's look at the second part. This is going to be Mark 14:37 to 42. Then he returned to his disciples and found them sleeping. Simon, he said to them, to Peter, are you asleep? Couldn't you keep watch for 1 hour? Watch and pray so that you will not fall into temptation. The spirit's willing, but the flesh is weak. Once more, he went away and prayed the same thing. When he came back again, he found them sleeping because their eyes were heavy. They didn't know what to say to him. Returning the third time, he said to them, are you still sleeping and resting? Enough. The hour has come. Look, the Son of Man is delivered into the hands of sinners. Rise, let us go. Here comes my betrayer. All right, we'll stop there now for a second. The second part here is weakness. All right, it's going to be weakness. So Jesus finds them, and this means those closest three, again, Peter, James, and John, who he had taken with him. And he comes back after praying and finds them sleeping. They weren't paying any sort of attention. Whether their eyes were actually closed in a full-blown sleep, they were just kind of in a disoriented type of trance. We're not sure, but they were not paying attention. They were not being watchful. And Jesus says, watch and pray. What he means here is this is spiritual watch. This is go to God because you're weak, but God is your strength. And he says, you know, the spirit is willing, but your flesh is weak. If we were to kind of maybe paraphrase this a little bit, it could be like, you know, great intentions and resolve are all well and good, but if we're not actively seeking God, we'll fall in a crucial moment. That's kind of what he's getting at with Peter. It's like, Peter, you have this great desire, or you have this great spirit about you, but when you're not watching and praying and seeking God, you'll fall in that moment. And here's what I find also really interesting about this piece, is Jesus is fully distressed, he's sorrowful, he's in pain. When he comes back to the three, he's not looking for comfort from them. He's checking on them, right? He goes back to check on them. He's not asking them to give him a hug. He's checking on them. It's this crazy, difficult hour, but he is coming to check on the three that are closest to him. And they're probably full of shame or embarrassment. When it says they didn't know what to say, they're probably just like, oh my gosh. He asked us to do one thing. Just stay awake and watch. And guys, we couldn't even do it. How embarrassed or shameful must they have had going on in that moment? And Jesus kind of brings it again, that three times, is like, oh guys, really? And then it's like, enough. We're done with this. Okay? I can't rag on you on this. I can't talk about this anymore because it's happening now. My betrayer has come. Here it goes. All right, so that's what's going on. But the main part of this is the weakness that we see from the disciples, how hard it is for them to submit their weakness to God. They have the Spirit, but they aren't doing what they need to do to back it up. This reminds me of one of my all-time favorite movie quotes from the great classic film Top Gun, when there's one of the instructors looks at Maverick, played by Tom Cruise, and says, son, your ego is writing checks, your body can't cash. Which is like, you are so arrogant and full of yourself. He's a fighter pilot, if you're not familiar with the movie. He does all this crazy stuff. And this instructor and this boss, whoever it is saying, you can't actually do this. You think you can, but you're not going to back it up. And this is one, I'll be honest, I wrestle with, especially when it comes to my own athleticism. I used to be an athlete long, long time ago now, back in high school. 36-year-old Jeff still likes to believe he's as in shape as 18-year-old Jeff was. That is not the case, as evidenced by the basketball season I just finished with and everything like that. Or I lift weights, right? So I get down there. If any of you are familiar with a max out, right? This is a one rep max where you're like, I'm going to just throw up as much weight as I can just one time and be like, yeah, I can do it. So I get going. The last 2 weeks this happened to me. I go up for my one rep max bench press, and I get down there. I'm all warmed up. I'm good. The tunes are in the Bluetooth. It's bumping. I'm ready to go. I get it off the rack, bring it down, and it goes about this far up. And then I say, nope, that's not happening. And it doesn't go back up. And I kind of like get off the bench, head goes down. It's like, man, my ego's writing a check. My body couldn't cash. In my head, I could put that back up. And then, of course, Stacy comes home and I have to tell her. And then she quotes this movie. Your ego write a check, your body couldn't cash again, babe. Yes, mm-hmm, way to go. And then she kind of laughs and walks away. But that's the point, is that intentions are great. Mindset's important. But when it comes to our spiritual lives, if we don't add focus or reliance on God, we will fall in our weakness. We can fall in those temptations. We have God available to us, but we have to go to him, because on our own, our temptations are too much for us, but they're not too much for God. That's why we have him there. And Jesus knows this with the three disciples. He's like, look, guys, I get it. Your spirit is willing. Your mindset's good. Your intentions are great. But the flesh is weak. You have to watch and pray and be on guard. And I don't think this is Jesus knocking the disciples. I really don't. I don't think he's berating them for it. I think he's trying to remind them of what they need to do. Remind them that you are weak and you need to stay aware and you need to be active in going to God. I think that's what Jesus is really doing here. So part of submitting to God fully is admitting those weaknesses that we can't handle ourselves. Nobody likes to admit weaknesses. I don't like to admit that I couldn't bench what I could, but I do. So when it comes to my spiritual life, I have to admit those weaknesses in my life as well. All right, so the part two is weakness. So we had sorrow, we had weakness. All right, thanks for sticking with me. We're going into the third one. This is going to be 14, 43 through 49. Let's see what happens now. Just as he was speaking, that's Jesus, Judas, one of the 12, appeared. With him was a crowd armed with swords and clubs sent from the chief priests, the teachers of the law, and the elders. Now the betrayer had arranged a signal with them. The one I kiss is the man. Arrest him and lead him away under guard. Going at once to Jesus, Judas said, Rabbi, and kissed him. The men seized Jesus and arrested him. Then one of those standing near drew his sword and struck the servant of the high priest, cutting off his ear. Am I leading a rebellion, said Jesus, that you've come out with swords and clubs to capture me? Every day, I was with you teaching in the temple courts, and you didn't arrest me. But the scriptures must be fulfilled. Let's stop there. This is betrayal. Betrayal is our third one. This is the betrayal that Jesus prophesied about at the Last Supper. If we remember last week, he says, one of you, one of the 12, will betray me. One of you who dips bread with me will betray me. This is now coming to fruition. It's happening. Right now, they do it in Gethsemane, probably. It was a quiet place. They didn't seem to want to incite any sort of mob, which is interesting because the crowd that comes with Judas, it's not a mob, but it's a crowd, so it's enough people. And they basically come armed with these clubs and everything. It's the typical armor that would be used to fight a rebellion. Yet they're trying to take Jesus in Gethsemane to not draw up a big crowd of anything. So it's kind of this interesting way they're going about it. But then Judas gives the signal. All right. He gives a signal. He's going to call him rabbi, and he's going to kiss him. So there's two pieces with this. One, the crowd arresting Jesus must not know who he is, because otherwise they wouldn't need a signal of who it is. So these guys are just out here arresting him because somebody told them to. For all we know, they don't have any issue themselves with Jesus. All right? And then there's the kiss. All right? Calling him rabbi and the kiss. This was like an ultimate show of respect and of love and of closeness between Judas and Jesus. But the action he's taking is the highest form of betrayal. He's turning him over to be arrested and eventually killed. And Judas is doing this all in one moment, all at the same time. This is a crazy betrayal. And then Jesus is seized, and a man nearby, one of his followers, from what we know, draws a sword and strikes one of the crowd. Now, we don't know who the man is that does this. There are theories that it's actually Peter. It might have fit his kind of compulsive personality. We don't know. Could have been someone else. But regardless of who it was, shows me this. The people there with Jesus were out of touch with Jesus because he did this. Jesus has never been violent. He was always nonviolent. He wasn't trying to save the world through an uprising or a violent rebellion. But that's exactly what this man that draws a sword takes on. Jesus knew he had to be arrested. He had to go to the cross and die. That's how he was saving the world, not by drawing swords and clubs or anything. And Jesus even says this to the people arresting them. He's like, you guys, you see me teaching right alongside you. For how long? You and your people, and you did nothing then. I was just there. So why are you acting like I'm going to fight back now? I'm not leading a rebellion. This isn't me. Let's go. So Jesus has to accept betrayal. All right, and betrayal being kind of like you have this group, right? You're all together on one thing. And then somebody goes completely the other direction. So let's take a lighthearted example again. Tough topic in betrayal, but lighthearted. Here's what we got. How many of you here are iPhone users? Real quick. Oh, yes. Everybody's an iPhone. Oh, good. This is going to play then because everybody's an iPhoner. What color, if we were to have a group text here with all of us here, what color are the bubbles, the text?
Blue.
Okay, blue. We're all iPhoners. Team iPhone, yeah, Apple. Now, what happens when Chris, who is playing the role of Judas today, goes and gets a Google phone, and then now we text tomorrow, what color is the bubble? It's green. How dare you? You changed our perfect text from all blue. Now it's green. Chris was an iPhoner with all of us, and how dare he betray us to that other side?
And you can't see the hearts anymore. It, like, re-lists the whole thing.
Whoa.
Stacey. Oh.
Stacey's taking this next level. So not only is it green, if you love it, you don't see the heart anymore. You don't see the thumbs up for the like. You can't reply specifically to something else. How dare you, Salman? He's raising his glass. Sam's over here cracking up laughing. That's the point, right? This is kind of a silly example, but that's the point. You're all on this one team. Everybody's together, tight-knit, and somebody goes completely the other way. That's what Judas does, and it's betrayal. And I have no way to describe betrayal other than honestly to tell you it sucks to deal with. It hurts. It's hard. I don't know how many of you have felt betrayed in life, in ministry, in whatever, but it is hard. None of us want to be betrayed. It's not easy to deal with. But Jesus, in fully submitting to God's Will had to go through betrayal. Now, will any of you in your lives be betrayed in some way like this for following God? I don't know. I hope not. I really do. I can't say for sure that it will or won't, but it's a possibility, and that's what we learn here, is that when we're following God, somebody may turn against us. We also have to be careful that we, in our own heads, don't turn against somebody else that's following God. Betrayal is unfortunately very real. It is a huge part of this story, and it is part of something that can happen when submitting to the will of God, and it hurts, but it is unfortunately a part of it. So it's something we just have to be aware of. Right? So there's sorrow, there's weakness, there's betrayal. You only got one more. We can do it. Mark 14:50-52 will end our passage today. Verse 50, then everyone deserted him and fled. A young man wearing nothing but a linen garment was following Jesus. When they seized him, he fled naked, leaving his garment behind. Just those three verses. Abandonment. Abandonment is our fourth one. Everybody deserts Jesus and flees the garden. Right? They just take off when it hits the fan here. Thing is, the crowd that came to arrest Jesus, I didn't care about the rest of them, right? It would be as if somebody walks in the door to arrest me and you all just dip out completely, but they don't care about you. I'm who they're after. That's what kind of happens here, right? His followers were in no real danger, but they don't know that, right? And this fulfilled the prophecy that he would be deserted. Jesus knew this was going to happen too. People are going to leave his side, his close friends, the people he has spent so much time with, and they abandon him when things get tough. You got this little last two verses. I'm the man with the linen garment, right? And he leaves his linen garment behind and runs away naked. This is actually only found in Mark's gospel. It's not in the other ones. There's some theories that maybe this was actually Mark himself that this happened to. We're not sure. The linen garment, though, was probably a nicer garment at this time, showing maybe this person had a little bit of wealth. Here's what matters about this little tidbit, these two verses. And one of the commentaries I studied on this said it really well. And they kind of phrased it like this. The people that followed Jesus, okay, the people that followed him, they gave up everything to go follow him, right? They were told, leave your stuff and follow me, and they did. But then when it got really rough, they left everything behind to abandon him. They left it all behind to abandon him, including this really valuable garment that this man was wearing. So they give up everything to go follow him. But then it gets tough. They leave everything behind and abandon. Why? I gotta believe self-preservation is part of it. They're looking out for themselves because they don't know what's going to happen. All right, it's self-preservation, and this happens. We have seen this type of story in the real world, in movies, in TV shows. All right, everybody's working at some company. Things are going great. The boss man's doing his thing. And all of a sudden, some investigators start to show up. Probably how many movies are like this, right? The police show up, they're investigating the guy at the top, and everybody underneath starts to take off and leave. Why? To cover themselves, because they don't know what's going to happen to them. They want to take care of themselves, self-preservation. Now, in these stories that we see in the movie, usually the boss is a corrupt and bad dude. In our story here, Jesus isn't, but he still gets abandoned by all these people that are really close to him when things get hard. This is another difficult one that people may leave. People may leave us as we follow what we're supposed to do in God. People that are close to us. Now, whether it's a straight up abandonment like this, I don't know. It could also be they tell us and we work it out, but they still leave. All right? This does happen. It can come in a variety of forms. But we may get abandoned at times or feel abandoned because people leave. And that's a hard one. But again, when we're following God, we have to understand that that may come with it. That may come with it. Jesus deals with it. And at the same time as others potentially leave us, we have to be careful that when things get hard, that we don't abandon following what God has for us. That we don't leave God thinking we can preserve ourselves better, thinking that we can protect ourselves better than God. It may get tough, but we stay true to what God has for us. That's what Jesus does. That's the example he sets. So this whole scene in Gethsemane, is tough, right? There's sorrow, there's weakness, betrayal, and really abandonment, which is like loneliness, all right? And these can all unfortunately come when we submit to God's will, but we're still supposed to submit and understand and learn what God's will is for us. So I would encourage you to seek God and his will for you continually, because the stronger our connection is with God, the more it is we can stay with what his will is for us. We can feel confident in his will for us. And remember that when these difficulties come, in sorrow, in weakness, in betrayal, in loneliness, in whatever, God is with us in them. All right, we don't abandon him. Even better, he doesn't abandon us. So God's still with us in those. So I would encourage you to seek out God's will for your life. What does he have for you? Spend time with him. And then let yourself follow that. Let's pray. God, we thank you for this scene in Gethsemane, God, for what we can really learn about it, as hard as it is to read and to see what really happens here and how difficult this was for Jesus, God. But God, first we thank you that he went through it and he did what he had to do to save us. And God, I pray that for each of us, we would be willing to seek your will for us, to put down our own plans and our own desires, to understand and hear what you have for us in our lives. And God, that when any of this stuff happens, God, whenever things get tough or difficult, God, that we would just stay close to you and just keep following you, God. In your name, amen.